Hello, and welcome to the 5-Core Life Podcast with Will Moore, founder of More Momentum. Today's episode, we are sitting down with Mitzi Perdue to talk about how to combat human trafficking and win this fight for good, and how she's using gamification to accomplish this. Mitzi brings attention to this very dire subject in this episode. If you haven't already, go ahead and pound that subscribe button so you get notified when episodes air. Are you ready to fire on all cylinders? If so, let's go.
Thank you. Oh my God. Thank you for being on. I've talked you up enough. So here you are.
So let me try and deliver because
you better.
I want to do something that hasn't been done before. And you're the person to talk with and your audience is the person to talk with. What if we could gamify, or what if we could create a human trafficking game? And it would be full of, how about violence, horror, and you get to be the hero and along the way, you learn a lot more about trafficking and ways to combat it. What do you think?
I love it, you know, because I mean, you're grabbing an audience that you never would have normally had. Right. And it immediately makes me think of, did you see that movie with Joaquin Phoenix, the human trafficking movie that came out a couple years ago?
I'm making a note to make sure that I do see it.
Oh, you haven't seen it? Oh, you should totally see it. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a really, it's one of the best movies I've ever seen made on human trafficking. I think it's on Amazon Prime. It did really well. I can't think of the name, but just Joaquin Phoenix, human trafficking, Google that.
And I'll find it. But I already have a group of people who are interested in actually creating this thing. And I think it'd be magnificent because, as you say, it would get a group of people who normally would never hear about it.
That's exactly right. So let's talk about it. So, I mean, you and I obviously talk weekly. I think we missed last week, so we hadn't really talked about this. Tell me where you are in this process and you know, where your head's at.
All right. There are people who are gamers and who know all the big gamers and believe that, you know, it might cost a couple of million dollars, but we also think there are people who would put a couple of million dollars into this. And there could be so many adventures, like maybe you're fingering a girl who's been in a cage for 2 years, and that's an actual example,
right?
Or you could go through some of, yeah, how did she get into it? How do you rescue her? How do you know you get to be the hero of
the hero?
Yeah, and there are thousands of different possible stories, and they can. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been told that with gaming, you really want violence and horror, but you also want heroes. You get to be the hero.
I'm already thinking. Yeah, I mean, we'll obviously we talk offline as well. So, but for the purposes of this, I mean, I got a million ideas. First of all, instead of just like you know, showing the human trafficking examples and then you're saving the person. Like, to me, a lot of games already have that type of theme, not necessarily with human trafficking, but you don't want it to get lost on them that they're like, okay, solve that mission, on to the next, and then they turn it off and then they forget about it, right? So the key is going to be bringing that into their consciousness to take with them after the game is over and to get them to want to take and get involved and take action, right? So I'm thinking about things like, you know, in the actual game, a link to a website that's also fun that kind of shows you how you can get involved, actual, you know, places, you know, donate here, like, okay, you just saved her, blah, 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 you know, you can actually save a real human being, donate $10, like these types of things so that it's incorporated in there versus just a game on its surface of human trafficking, which I know how that's going to go because I'm a gamer. You're going to play and be like, oh, this is cool. And you're going to think about human trafficking. Like, oh, that's awful. But then you turn it off and it's out of your head.
All right. Right? I interact with real life as much as possible. And I think, there's so many interesting stories that you could be the hero of. But I also think it would change a lot of people's minds forever because let's go into porn. Your audience can handle us talking about porn.
Of course, they can handle anything.
That was rhetorical.
I figured.
But something like 95% of the pornography that you see was not voluntary. And in the case of where it's somebody who's trafficked and she's, you know, somebody's done to her out of sight, out of frame of the camera, and she's saying that she loves doing this. No, she doesn't. She's about to be killed if she doesn't go along with it.
Right.
Or another aspect of pornography that I bet a lot of people aren't aware of, but you're familiar with revenge porn. You're a guy, you break up with the girl, you're really mad at her for dumping you, and you've taken pictures of ruin her life. And not only that, you can, it's immortal, because even if the girl commits suicide, that which they have done, it goes on and on, and you can't take it down, because you can't take it down here and it pops up there. You could tell stories like that and rescue people, but my guess is that anybody who's been through the games that I have in mind, you know, it's an adventure. You get to feel good because you're saving people from misery. But you also probably aren't going to look at porn the same way.
I mean, that's absolutely, you know, God.
Text of the story.
Yep.
That I would love to include in the game. I mean, a real gamer could know how to make this addictive and, you know, just irresistible. But here's a story that I would love to have get across. Are you aware, I mean, you are aware, that back in the 1960s, the tobacco companies did everything they possibly could to make you think that nicotine wasn't harmful. I mean, they had a vast, well-oiled machine. The pornography industry has that right now, where they spend a fortune convincing you that pornography's okay, that the girls are doing it or the guys are doing it voluntarily and that there's no harm.
Right.
The exact parallel of what the tobacco companies did. I mean, they even have the ability to have anti-porn articles kept out of major magazines, and I know this firsthand. Wouldn't it be neat if all these things that people don't know, they learned? Or another thing they might learn? Why do traffickers absolutely never, that's not true, rarely end up in jail? Their chances are like 1 chance in 100. Because the traffickers know how to arrange for reluctant witnesses. I mean, for example, this, you know, if it's really true that gangs require some heart, a girl might be porcupined. And I bet you don't know what porcupine
is. No. What is that?
All right, first let me tell you how I know about it, because I was talking with a psychiatric social worker who's dealing with the 12-year-old child whose mother was trafficked and porcupined, like in the last couple of years. The child got to see the body of his mother with 100 syringes. They killed her with just in porcupining her with 100 different syringes. Now that's pretty motivational for the next person not to talk, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so they really know how to keep people from talking. But I would think, I mean, if this is done right, and it would take cleverness and more understanding of how it works than I'm capable of, but that's why we have the professionals. There are stories that that will have all the violence you could wish for, but then there's all the rewards if you prevent this from happening. And then the next question is, if you can't put them in jail because they're reluctant witnesses, how about you can put them in jail for financial crimes? What if you could even solve problems of like attacking and bringing down trafficking rings or even cartels by going after their finances and putting them in jail the Al Capone way? You get them for financial crimes.
Tax, what, they got him for tax evasion or something?
Yeah.
Right.
There's dozens and dozens of dead people, but they never could get him jailed because of reluctant witnesses.
Mm.
But IRS was able to capture this. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's, you and I have discussed that before, and I think that's a great angle to take. So how do you, How does that happen? You know, do you just point the IRS in the direction, or whoever in the direction, like find out? Because don't you you got to find those crimes, and who's finding them, and how are you? You know what I mean?
Well, actually, what I'm really doing in real life, other than being fascinated by gaming, is I'm working on raising, I would like, you're all going to go nuts when I say this, but here goes. But some people have been encouraging me to say that this is possible. There's an organization called Polaris that right now has a financial crimes unit. They employ two people who have dark web experience, who know how to use artificial intelligence. They can track bank records and money flows. There are two of them. I'd like to raise enough money so they have 100 people working on it. Oh. And I think it can be done. There are some fabulous people who are working on this, including there's a group called Annie Cannons in California that trains women who've been trafficked but who have high IQs to become coders. They can make $90,000 a year after 1 year of training. What if instead of training them to be coders, we trained high IQ trafficking survivors to be white hat hackers?
I love it. Okay. You know what this is kind of reminding me of? Sorry, go ahead, finish.
The white hat hackers who are trafficking survivors, what they can do that is missing from the whole picture right now is, if you're in law enforcement and you want to infiltrate a cartel or a trafficking ring, they'll find you out right off. I mean, the traffickers are just sort of hypersensitive. You use the wrong word, they know you're law enforcement, they freeze you out. You have a white hat trafficker, sorry, a white hat trafficking survivor. She knows all the words. She knows the MO. She knows where they hide things. She knows how they move people around. You know, she can penetrate where law enforcement can't. Cool.
That's exactly right. You know, so some of this stuff, do you ever see the movie The Untouchables with Kevin Costner?
Yes.
It's kind of ringing a bell, like, right? They were like this little group, and, you know, it's like, it starts with a small, you know, and a task force of people that are dedicated, and it's like, right, it needs to be bigger. It needs to grow, and it needs to be, you know, just as big as any other big force out there trying to stop bad things happening in the world.
But it's going to take a lot of money, because you have two people attacking a $150 billion industry, Now, surely Polaris would grow if they had more money. What if we can raise more money for them? And I'm working right now with an organization called Linked Strategies to create a fantastic business plan, which will be, you know, anchored in, you know, things that are already existing, what you pay a white hat hacker. And just in case you need to know, if you're a beginner, you can start out like $100,000. Well, what if we could get the money to hire 100 and pay? I would like to get retired, like CIA or IRS or any of the three-letter agencies or military, hire them and have them work like hand in glove with the white hat traffickers who've had a year of learning from a group like Annie Cannon's how to code. Let's go for 1,000. And what I'm very, very excited about is word of this is spreading a little bit. And I've just, like in the last 3 days, been on the phone with Hong Kong, woman who wants to do it, Singapore, a woman who would like to start something like that in Singapore, Australia. And then the best of all, there's a woman who works with a consortium of philanthropies in 11 different Asian countries, and they like this concept. And so they're going to work hand in glove with us, making this international crime.
Wow, I love it. So Mitzi, everybody, she's a doer. Mitzi doesn't just talk about things, Mitzi does. And that's what I love about you, Mitzi. Whenever we talk, you get ideas, and then you're like, you're looking for ways and you're talking to people to implement them versus just getting the idea, having it go in and out like most people's and then, right? And so, I mean, we've talked about gamifying it, right? Somebody mentioned like, come on guys, gamifying, let's see, Miss Alexander. So it sounded like you felt like we were trivializing it, and it couldn't be more opposite of the truth. I think where Mitzi's going with this, because we've actually talked about this stuff online, is, you know, figuring out a way to tap into the mainstream of people's consciousness, because right now it's not, it hasn't happened, right? And it's something that people, it's one of those topics that people go, oh, that's a shame, but then they don't do anything about it, right?
I want gamifying for good, because I'm familiar with a magazine. I wonder how many of our audiences have ever heard of this, but it's called Games for Good. No, sorry, Games for Health. And there's a whole magazine devoted to that genre of games. And if you can have games for health, and you're aware of it. I mean, you mentioned Peloton earlier. There are a lot of ways that you can use games for good. And I don't consider it trivializing it, although I respect that might look like that. But no, this is educational, although educational isn't terribly attractive to people. So
edutainment is the new word. I want you to start using that when you talk to people about what you're doing. Edutainment is what's exploding right now, and it ties into the gamification. And you know, TikTok, you and I have talked about this offline. You look at TikTok and what they're doing, and they've exploded, right? I mean, they're huge now. They started off as like, you know, and I didn't even look at it for like a year, because it's like, oh, it's just another one of these Snapchat or social media. And then once I looked at it, I was like, now I get it. And it's extremely addicting. But here's the thing that they're trying to do. Their goal, and they just announced this recently, is they want to start really making sure that they're pushing the content that's both entertaining and educational, meaning it's bettering your life, right? So rather than just like mindless, oh, that was funny, he broke his leg on a skateboard, it's, you know, people entertaining. And if you look at TikTok, you're starting to see a lot more of that. And people, you know, these people like me that are like, well, I want to actually do something and help the world, but doing it in a fun and creative, you know, unique way, which, by the way, my TikTok page, I'm about to revamp it and do what I'm saying. So if you look at it now, you'll probably be like, what's going on? Like, I've been trying all these different things to see what's hitting, but I think I have a good direction. But point is, and we've even talked to Mitzi about doing the human trafficking TikTok page, where, you know, figuring out ways to get people, and maybe it's not fun and happy, but it's getting people, whatever you use, connecting to their why, right? And going, yes, I want to watch this. This is interesting. This speaks to me at a visceral, deeper level. And I want to take the actions, whether it's for themselves or to help somebody else. In your case, you know, the human trafficking.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to me.
I'm going to draw on background I had as a science writer. And I wrote for Scripps Howard a column called The Environment and You. It was the most widely syndicated environmental column in the country for almost a decade. And I had a secret sauce that I think could apply to human trafficking. And that is the environment. And if you get into it deeply enough, it's deeply discouraging. I mean, well, we know that. But the premise that I had in my weekly column was I would interview true experts, but I would always try to leave you at the end of it thinking, oh, there's something I can do. There's hope. You know, the situation's bad. It's worrisome. Things are going extinct. Things are, you know, the earth is boiling, whatever. And I don't mean to be trivial about it. But whatever it is, there are ways of framing it so you can do something and there's hope. And I want to use exactly that formula for human trafficking.
Absolutely. And totally agree. And Miss Alexander, who I addressed, thank you. She responded. She said, if you haven't been a victim or have a close relationship with somebody that this impacts or has impacted, I think you'll realize why I made that comment. Where she was, I think, saying, seriously, gamification. So Mitzi, I personally do not, I assume you have met, I mean, I know you've met a lot of people that are fighting it.
I talk to survivors daily. That's not true. Two or three times a week, at least.
Yeah. And could you tell us, why don't we get into a little bit of what you've learned from them? And you know, I want people watching this to, like, because right now it's such a surfacey thing, right? People are like, human trafficking, bad, right? But let's get into, like, what is it actually like to be human trafficked, and what does that do to a person?
Okay, because it's on my mind, this morning I was talking with a, in this case, it's not a survivor, it's the social worker who's also a psychiatrist, who was telling me about a success story that she had. But this is what I'm going to describe today, I learned about today. This woman, she works for a shelter for women who've been trafficked, because if women who've been trafficked, maybe they escape or somebody rescues them, their odds of going right back onto the street if they don't have therapy is it's like 80 or 90%. So this woman run or yeah, she's the executive director of a safe house that gives psychological support to people who've been trafficked. The case she was telling me about today, the girl, and she was 17 years old. She was lured away, got into being trafficked. But by the time she was like 19, her trafficker, who would move her all over the country and make her have sex with strangers 10 or 12 times a night, turned out to be better than what came next, because he sold her to, now that she's 20, she wasn't as appealing to the clientele of her first trafficker. And she sold him to a man whose specialty was keeping her in a cage 24 hours a day, except when she was let out. And this man wanted her to look younger than she did. And by the way, she's 27 now. He kept her in a cage where she could never stand up. I mean, she could be, and they would only let her out. Oh, she was starved. She's 5'5". Her weight when she came to the shelter was 94 pounds. And trust me, that's my height, and I won't tell you how much I weigh, but it's about 30 pounds more. And I think I'm a healthy weight. Can you imagine 94 pounds and 5'5"? But he wanted her to look like prepubescent. I mean, if you're that thin and you're a woman, you don't have breasts and you can look like a child. So she's a child, and his clientele were people who had fetishes. And I don't know what that means to you, but do I dare be explicit?
Dare. This is what I'm saying. People need to hear this stuff.
Okay.
And by the way, if you don't want to hear this, feel free to log off. But to me, this is important that people hear this stuff because it needs to, people need to understand what's actually happening to people.
Okay, I think everybody knows about the golden shower, but do you know about the bear hug? The
No.
bear defecate on the woman's breasts, and then you force her to embrace you, and so it gets smeared all over you. I mean, there are people who like that.
Yeah.
And since she was so thin, she looked like a little girl. Well, okay, I think I will go into more of them, but trust me, she told her social worker or her case manager that she loved being in her cage, because when she was out of her cage, bad things were happening to her. When she was in her cage, she was safe. And then the rest of her story is she finally managed to escape because they needed clothes, or she needed clothes, and her trafficker, carefully watching her, took her to one of those organizations like the Salvation Army. I don't think it was the Salvation Army, but where you could get used clothes very, very inexpensively. And so she had to try on the clothes, and I think she crawled out a window or something and escaped the person who was watching her, and made her way, I guess.
Wow.
But she was put in a shelter, and for almost a year, the following would happen. Typically, the shelters, at least this was Oregon, her experience was that a shelter would keep her for a month, but they wouldn't keep her longer, so she'd have to find another. And her terrible problem was she would tell kept in the cage, and nobody would believe her. They wouldn't believe people would do things so awful to her. And they were diagnosing her as paranoid and bipolar and schizophrenic. They didn't know until one person working with the police and figuring out the location found the cage and found the trafficker. And at that point, her healing began, because up until then, nobody would believe
She
her.
got what she was believed, yeah.
I'll jump to the end of the story. And to me, it just seems beyond imagination that somebody could recover from that much trauma. but she's had a couple of years of counseling, and actually it's faith-based. She now, she doesn't have any of these diagnoses like being bipolar and schizophrenic, because now people believe her, and she is living independently. She pays rent, and she has a job working in a greenhouse. And yeah, that somebody could recover from something that dire boggles my mind, but that's the kind of thing. Oh, and one more statistic. The odds of a girl who's the typical age that a girl is brought into the life is 12 to 14, and her life expectancy is 7 years. Die of overdose or suicide, disease, organ harvesting. Yeah, the world is the most dark, horrible thing in the world. But let's pivot now to what's more encouraging. What if we had a way of stopping it? What if enough people were aware of this, that, back during the time of abolition, there came a sort of tipping point where people just said, this is impossibly wrong, we won't do it anymore. What if the world became enough aware of the horror of this that we were able to stamp it out? And there are ways, and I'm afraid that I'm going to monologue too long if I talk to you about ways, but the way I think is attacking their finances.
Yeah.
Because right now there is no penalty because the witnesses are too scared.
Yeah.
Records, and you can put them in jail.
Right. And the white glove hackers. Yeah. Totally. And so, God, there's so much process there. So, first of all, somebody asked, how is she now?
This girl?
The girl you were just talking about. Let's.
She continuously. However, she is living independently, and she has a paying job in the greenhouse, and she's actually pretty happy because, in her case, it was very, very much faith-based. She prays a lot and prays for strength and courage, and I don't think somebody has resilience to pass what she did, but I don't think she'll ever have a complete. But it's a heck of improvement over what.
Yeah. Well, and it's you said she's 27 now. I mean, right. It's going to be a, when did all this end? How long has it been since she's been?
She's been in therapy, trauma-based therapy for 2 years.
Got it. Okay.
Talking to before coming on today. And by the way, I asked your therapist, how do you deal with something so dark and terrible? Because, me, I'm just writing about it. I write columns a week on different anti-trafficking organizations, and I do that to educate me. But also, I work for Psychology Today and with several other news outlets, including the Association of Foreign Press Correspondents.
Yeah, no, that's so great.
Yeah, so I'm getting the story out by interviewing people and educating myself at the same time.
Yeah. And so just to kind of bring this all first full circle, I saw Alexander had said again, would your game replicate these stories? That's very traumatizing. Just to bring this with the gamification, I think I want to clarify, gamification, it doesn't have to be fun. And the whole point is you're reducing the friction of taking certain actions by showing people in a different light, and everybody's different. And so to me, it doesn't just have to be a video game. Like I said, like TikTok, edutainment, in a way that's gamifying personal development and growth because you're making it fun and interesting to learn about things. And there's also things that aren't so fun and funny but that you want to learn about and that you want to get involved with. And again, it's just getting it to the masses in a way that they can resonate with. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. It doesn't, video game, TikTok, whatever it is. And it's, right. You don't want to, it's a fine line with something that's as horrible as this, especially clearly somebody here, Alexander, has had somebody that she knows or was the victim. And, right. You don't want them to be like, they're trivializing it. So it's that fine line, but just know that the whole point is figuring out a way to get people interested. Like you're almost tricking their brains into going, hey, look over here. And they're like, okay, oh, this is cool. What's this? This is interesting. It's like, oh, but hey, this is what's happening. And let's connect on a deeper level. If this is something that touches you, like, here's the information in a way that's interesting to you. And now you can take action on it. That's the best way I can say it.
Well, actually, I think I'd like even a different word than gamification, because
the way
I look at it, I want people to be influenced by thinking, I can help stop this. You're not going to win points in this game unless you're stopping the bad guys.
Right. Exactly. And I think that's a good point. Right. The name itself, and this was a good kind of test, right? Like, it can turn people off if they have personal experiences from it. So it's that principle, but maybe it's a different term of how it's, you know.
Edutainment?
Yeah, edutainment probably wouldn't work either, because that sounds like you're being entertained, and that doesn't really go with human trafficking either.
But what if you use the word gamification instead? Be a hero, stop trafficking.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. Yeah, there you go. Right, it's how you present it. It's the spin.
I mean, my understanding a little bit of gaming is that there's got to be really evil, horrible, bad guys, and then superheroes. And I want the person engaging in this to learn a lot and identify with being the hero who stops these horrible monsters.
Right. And no, not just the answer she said again for points. No. Yeah, for points. But then the whole point, as we discussed earlier, is then having call to actions to actually get involved in real life to do things, whether it's, you know, signing up for this, you know, on your website to get involved, whether it's donating, you know, whatever it is. But actually, the whole point is it's the bridge between, hey, that's a bad thing over there, but I don't really want to have anything to do with it, to now bringing them into that world and getting them to take action.
Well, this idea is pretty new, and it's going to take a lot of fine tuning, but yeah. We're extraordinary experts in this, who are interested in making it work.
Yeah. I mean, and then we, as we know, well, we know some good people in that industry. And I have dedicated my life to it, and we got other people that we're talking to, and it's only going to expand more and more.
But so, you know, feedback that the word gaming when there's so much suffering is inappropriate. So I'm grateful for that feedback, because you know, I don't want this to be its own form of pornography. I want it to be something where you feel, I want to train people that to be on the side of the angels, you have to help stop this.
Right. Well, and we're just spitballing right now. Right. I mean, obviously the end product, the way it's conveyed, it's like I said earlier, it's going to be that fine line of like getting people interested, but not offending people to like where people are thinking it's being trivialized, right? Yeah. And I do think there's definitely a way to do it. I know there is. It's how you present it so that people go, everybody, not just some people, go, oh wow, yeah, that's a really clever way to get me interested in this, and now I'm interested, and by golly, I'm going to take action, and I never would have, right? And that's what we all agree on, I think. And sorry, real quick, before she keeps, Alexander, she's the one that's most vocal here. She mentioned twice now about an idea, which I think is actually an interesting idea too, which is having a show that's interactive, similar to like a 48 hours or a Dateline.
Oh.
And getting people involved in the community to get rewards and stuff. I think that's a cool idea as well.
Is it Alexandra or Alexander?
It looks like Miss Alexander is his same only one.
Okay. This is so valuable, because my late husband used to say, none of us is as smart as all of us. And so the more input, the better.
That's exactly right. And thank you for being proactive. What you did right there, Miss Alexander, that's a growth owner versus a fixed victim. Okay. Instead of a fixed victim going, this is crap, like this isn't going to work. You know, you got at first what we were talking about offended you slightly, clearly. And again, as Mitzi said, that's good feedback. Like, we got to be wary of how we present it. So thank you. But then you came in with your own solution of, hey, what about this? Right. And so Thank you. That's awesome. I'm sure Mitzi, I'm sure you can reach out to Mitzi on her page DM directly if you have any more ideas and whatnot. It sounds like you're somebody that's got a personal experience with this. So Mitzi, correct me if I'm wrong, but she can reach out to you directly.
No, because I have a guiding philosophy, and I bet you're going to approve of this. It comes from NASA, National Aeronautics and Space Administration. A rocket ship to the moon is off course 95% of the time, but it still reaches the moon because it makes course corrections. And I figure that with what I'm working with this gaming thing, it's going to be off course. We make a correction. It's still off course, but we keep correcting.
That's it. That's it. And that's, I mean, you're actually using a gamification analogy to discuss how you're going to master gamification. It's brilliant. It's gamification within gamification, people, right? And that's like my app, as we've talked about, which I'm so excited with the rocket ship, and it's easy to get off course, and you're not living the life that's going to make you happy, and you're not living the five core life and forming these habits that are actually going to help you become happier and whatnot, but you're stuck in these failure habits. So yeah, I love that. And it all started years and years ago. I want to say it was Dale Carnegie. Dale Carnegie. Yeah. The best, right? He used an analogy like a ship without a rudder will never find its destination type of deal. It kind of ties in. It just reminded me of that. Like, and I'm using the rocket ship now, but that's where it all stemmed from for me. Like, I never forgot that. Sort of like, you got to have a rudder, and you're gonna get off course, and a storm's gonna hit, and you're gonna learn. Okay, well, next time we need to batten down the hatches, and we need to do this, and you learn from each failure and each thing that happens. But if you know where you're going, you just keep going as that growth owner. You fail forward, and you don't take no for an answer, and you're gonna get there.
Well, I couldn't be more on the same page.
I love it. Well, so I'm glad we did this again, because last time we talked, I mean, you're a wealth of, I mean, we could probably have 10 of these, because, you know, we got into a lot of other stuff. I mean, we didn't even talk about your dad, your late husband. Why don't we at least get it, you know, switch gears here for a second and give people, I think that the treasure hunting thing that we just have been recently talking about is fascinating. I had no idea. A lot of people don't realize this. Mitzi's late husband, Frank Perdue, Perdue Chicken. We all know. Remember the guy on the commercials, everybody? Love that guy. So he had a very interesting private life, as Mitzi would attest to, because she was married to him. Tell us about the treasure hunting and the results of it.
Okay. Historically, the most valuable treasure ship that ever sank was called the Atocha. Sank in 1622. In today's dollars, it had $2 billion worth of stuff on it. Emeralds, gold coins, silver coins, just treasure, and it sank. And it was so sad, because when it sank, there were two ships following it when a hurricane washed it up on the Florida Keys. They knew exactly where it sank, and so there was so much treasure, of course they wanted to rescue it. But it was just about, it sank in, I think it was 180 feet of water. It was just beyond where the technology of the day would allow people to go, so they could get within like 10 or 20 feet of it, and they could see it when they were trying to recover it. But nobody in the whole world was able to go deep enough to get any of the treasure, so it stayed in the bottom of the ocean until roughly 1985. And Frank Perdue, he wasn't a treasure hunter himself, but he loved the whole enterprise. And he was one of 16 backers that were paying $1 million a year to find the Atocha.
$1 million, not each, total, correct?
But still, I mean, that's a chunk.
Still a lot. I just want to...
It for yes. 14. Well, at 14 years of the 16 backers, 14 quit. Yeah, they just said, this is money down a rat hole, we're out of here.
So at this point, pretty much everybody's put in about $1 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so Frank and his best friend were left holding the bag. And Frank at that point said, you know, something's wrong with the map. Let's go back to the original map in the archive of the Indies in Seville, Spain. and see if they made a mistake in translating it. Turned out that they had. I mean, Frank paid for a scholar to go there and look. And like a year later, they found the treasure.
And now you have some pieces of that treasure still, correct?
A few. The majority of it Frank gave away to the Smithsonian. And also to found a whole museum in Delaware. Or he and his best friend together. But I'm wearing something that I wear frequently. I get a little closer to see.
Oh, love that. So, right, if they're listening to the podcast, they won't be able to see it. But it's a silver coin from what's the origin?
The silver itself came from the mines in Potosi, which I think is Peru. Mm-hmm. And then the coins were brought to Cuba. I think I'm right in that. Yeah, they were brought to Cuba, and then they were loaded on this boat that set sail for Spain. But the amazing thing about the history of this coin and all the other treasures, when the government of Spain at the time, and again, we're talking 1622, the king of Spain at that point, he was deeply in debt, partly because of wars of conquest. When he couldn't pay his debts, the bankers wouldn't give him any more money. And that Spain had been the absolute superpower of the world. It began a downward spiral from which it never recovered. So, and then
this ship changed significantly the course of history.
Absolutely.
Spain was a superpower, right? I mean, you look, anybody that went to school and learned about history and I mean, Spain had it going for quite a while.
The world's superpower. It would be getting treasure from as far away as the Philippines and certainly from South America. And there, you know, they're just oceans of money. It was called the riches of the Indies, which would arrive. And I'm not sure whether it arrived every year or every 2 years, but it was enough to keep the king, you know, just a lavish lifestyle. But when they lost $2 billion, they couldn't pay their soldiers anymore. And what happened then? King couldn't pay his soldiers. He invited the soldiers to, quote, live off the land, stealing from everybody. And so from being somewhat popular, they became just hated beyond imagination. And Spain began to pull back because the local populations, instead of thinking, hey, these aren't all that bad, they're good for the economy because they're paying for food and lodging. But when all of a sudden they're taking the food and lodging, and a downward spiral. So the world's superpower lost it.
Unbelievable, right? It's kind of like you see these movies and it's like there's this one show, I haven't actually watched it, but it's like, what if Germany had won the war? And it's like an alternate universe with Germany. It's like, what if Spain had maintained their superpower? Like, what would the world look like? Fascinating stuff, butterfly effect type stuff. My brain goes, I love that type of thing. Letting my mind go down the rabbit hole and thinking like, wow, like this one thing. And now you're a piece, that's gotta be neat for you to have, you have a piece of that and you're part of that.
Well, my engagement was an emerald that we think was meant to be of Spain. It was one of the larger perfect emeralds. It's nice to have a husband whose hobby is treasure hunting.
Right. Not a bad gig. Not a bad gig. Well, and you yourself have not a bad gig. So this has been amazing. I like to wrap up. Well, maybe you don't remember, but so I kind of put my guests on the spot, but I'm not worried about it with you. Sometimes people get a little nervous when I ask this, and then you can see them being like, but I like to, what is one success habit that you have developed over the course of your life that has essentially made you into the person, not only that you are now, but it is helping you build momentum every day and become that person that you want to be?
Okay. I would personally rate myself fairly high in conscientiousness. And one of the ways that plays out is before I go to bed at night, I'm usually going to look at a list of the things that I want to do the next day. I'm going to make it. And I my absolute best to do those things that I've listed. So I guess list making and acting on the list. And by the way, Frank was fairly similar to that. I didn't get it from him, but I noticed he did something similar. Yeah, he would check off.
Habits of highly successful people, right? So I think the key is, and when I was chatting earlier before you were able to get on, I was talking about The Secret, that book that was like, I remember, do you remember that when that came out in the video? It was like huge, like 20 some years ago. And I just remember I was obsessed with it. And there's even one scene in there where and the whole thing was basically your thoughts become things. Think hard enough and focus enough on something and it'll be manifested in your life in reality. I mean, that's the short version. There's more to it, but that's the gist. Right. Go ahead. What are you saying?
In that your thoughts carry out into the real world.
Become things, yeah. But there's a problem there it took me years to put the pieces together, and this is now part of everything that I'm doing and trying to help people with and teaching to my young sons that are 2 and 5, the action part of it. And so I want to just call out what you just said. The lists, that's one thing, right? I mean, anybody can make lists. But then it's actually the next day prioritizing and taking action on them versus just letting them sit and that list growing larger and larger. How many of us have to-dos that just keep getting bigger and bigger and we get drowned in them and we just kind of, they almost get overwhelming, and then people just are like, oh, well, that's too hard, or that's too, whereas as I said earlier in the show, like, you're one of those people that, and one of the things I admire most about you is you're an action taker. You take the action. You don't just think the thoughts. You walk the walks.
Can I amend what I said about lists?
Yes, you can.
I'm a big believer in doing the hardest one first. The effort that you really don't want to do.
That's huge. Because that basically what you're doing there, and I'm sure you know this, but what I see when I hear that is, you're forcing yourself to grow, and growth is happiness, because by taking an action on something that you're scared of or that you think is going to be hard, you have no choice but to use everything in your power to muster up the whatever to get it done. And then when you do it, it feels so much better than that little dinky whatever, you know, something that takes 5 seconds to do, and you've grown in doing it and you've gained confidence. I call it going from your failure loop to your success loop. You're stepping into your success loop, which is you take a little bit of action, you have a little bit of success, you gain some confidence, which then gives you energy to want to take more action. And you take more action, you get a little bit more success, you gain more confidence. And so you're just like, and it's propelling you, and it's this momentum loop of wanting to take more and more action because you're seeing there's results, you're feeling better, you're getting bigger, better, faster, stronger, smarter every step of the way. So I love that. Thank you.
Well, I believe what you just said with every one of the 80 trillion cells in my body. I mean, it's just true.
Love it. Well, always a pleasure, my dear. And are we on for today? Is it today?
No.
Yeah, I think we're talking later, unless... I don't know, we'll email their group. We have a little networking group, and it's so lovely and fun, and we talk every week.
Anybody, everybody.
We lost the very first part. What was that?
It's like we have our own mastermind, and yeah. I recommend to everybody have a mastermind group that inspires you to do more.
Absolutely. It feeds my soul every week, and it's talking to people. You want to find these people that are like-minded, that share your passions about life and your goals and your missions, and just talking to these people regularly, good things are going to come from it, right? So we know that's going to happen with us, and good call. We recommend it to everybody out there. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and Mitzi, always a pleasure. Love you so much. Thank you for being on the show.
I love your audience. I love your premise. It's just great. So thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Okay. We'll talk later.
Beautiful. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
That's it for the 5 Core Life. If you haven't already, go ahead and hit that like button on this video and pound that subscribe button so you get notified when new episodes drop. Also, please fill out the free 5-Core Life Evaluator quiz. It's a great way to get a baseline of where you are in the 5 cores and which of the 5 cores you need support. In addition, you'll get some actionable advice that you can apply and start improving your life in the areas that you need it most. That's it for today's episode of the 5-Core Life Podcast. Have a wonderful day.
Get moving. Gain momentum. Join the movement. Join Emmett by going to moremomentum.com to take a free life evaluator quiz on where you currently stand in each of your 5 cores.